Wines from the Savoie region in eastern France are having a greater revitalization, thanks to the increasing interest of the producer to focus on quality wines and export market. For many years, most of the wines were destined to be consumed in the ski resorts dotted across the region and held back the potential of the region's wines. With my guest, Wayne Cloach, author of Wines of the French Alps, we explore the new revival and how this is happening. Also, we talk about the many unique grape varieties of the region. Savoie is one of the most diverse when it comes to tourist grape varieties in the whole of France, as Wink is very keen to tell us in the episode. We also talk about sparkling wines, which make up a lot of the interest of the region. As Wink tells us, there is a little bit of a problem with the legislation, especially for the newly granted Cremant of Savoie. Hi, I'm Mattias Carpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, process, and concept that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you enjoy the show and your own journey, Looking Into Wine. Welcome to Looking Into Wine. Today's guest is Wink Lorch, author of The Wines of the French Alps. Welcome, Wink.
Thank you, Mattia. It's great to be with you here.
I'm very passionate about the whole project and the whole book because I was one of the backers of your crowdfunded book, and it was been for me, I followed the whole journey, and it was so interesting to see all the book developing and all the story. How was your idea to start this book? Why did you decide to write it?
Well, it really started with my previous book, which was Jura Wine. And I had to make a decision about writing Jura Wine first before the book that was going to be focused on Savoie and the other French Alps wine areas. And I had to do Jura first because, frankly, there was a demand for it. Everybody was crying out for information on Jura. And yet, normally, my first sort of passion in the mountains was certainly the French Alps, because I've been lucky enough to own a second home up in a French ski resort for many, many years now. And so that's really through that is why I investigated Savoie wines from 25 years ago. And I was already working in wine. I wasn't focused on Savoie or Jura or anything like that because there was no demand. I was teaching. I taught on diploma. I did various things. But when I came to my French Alps home, obviously I bought the local wines, and they were Savoie wines. So coming to the book, which was published last year, it really has been a long time coming, because I published the first book in 2014, and it had to be Jura wine, as I say, because of the fashion for Jura and the demand. And so I always intended to do the next book on Savoie and the other Alpine regions of France. And so it took its time, but eventually it's here, and that's how it came about.
Yes, it took a few years, but it was well worth it. It's such an interesting topic. For me, one of the most surprising things, because it was when I looked at the region and I saw the map, how spread the whole region of Savoie is and how differentiated it is.
Well, it covers a very large geographic region, because there are a lot of high mountains in the middle and on the edges, and you cannot plant vines up high mountains. There's also a lot of lakes and so on. So you, even in the past, when there were 10 times the area of vineyards than there are today, pre-phylloxera, even then, the vineyards would always have been scattered in what in French is sort of known as little islands of vineyards. And that is necessarily the case because of the geography. There are some very big mountain lakes. There are very high mountains and so on. So there's only a certain area that you can have for agriculture. And on the plains, you obviously have other crops, and you have the vines on the hillsides.
And where about in France are we? Just where about the Savoie region is?
The Savoie region is in the northwestern part of the French Alps. So this is in eastern France, very close to Switzerland. Geneva in Switzerland is sort of one corner of it. And then it's not that far from Lyon. Again, it depends which island of vineyards you're talking about, because it is such a big area. And then the Italian border, Chamonix, is just to the east. So there's one famous vineyard area where the vigneron Dominique Bellois of Aïs is. I mean, that is just, I'm not sure how many kilometers, but it's about 40 minutes drive to the Mont Blanc tunnel.
How many hectares does the whole region represent? Because I know it's like more or less the 1% or 2% of the whole French production.
Oh, it's much less than that. It's 0.2%. It's just over 2,000 hectares for Savoie on its own. The book covers Bourget as well, which is often mixed up with Savoie. And on wine lists, you will see the wines of Bourget and the wines of Isère often as sort of incorporated into Savoie. So, but even if you took those three regions together, Savoie, Bourget, and Isère, you would have less than 3,000 hectares. So it's tiny.
And while I was reading the book, another thing that was striking, it was the diversity of grape variety and the use of they have of local grape varieties. And
that really, to me, is the most exciting thing about the vineyards of Savoie today and for the future, very much for the future. The fact of having this diversity of grape varieties means that the region should be able, in theory, to cope better with climate change than some of the more traditional regions. And so I always forget the numbers, but there's about 20 grape varieties that are officially allowed in the AOC for Savoie. But there's a whole load of other grape varieties that are in minuscule quantities that have not yet been introduced into the AOC, but there is a group of passionate people, an organization called the Centre Ampelographie Alpin, named after Pierre Gallet, a famous ampelographer, a grape scientist. And this organization, which has been going now for something like 15 years, is comprised of a mixture of vignerons and passionate wine lovers who are there to preserve these grape varieties, because the official grape the official bodies of Savoie don't do a lot to help that, actually. And so they have almost rehabilitated some of the grapes. So one example might be Persan. And Persan is a red grape, red wine grape variety. And it traditionally grew in large quantities in both Savoie and in Isère. And by 20 years ago, there were just 2 hectares left. And that really isn't very much. Today, if you include what is not yet productive, there might be 20, 25 hectares. It's still very small, but the grape is approved of within the AOC. And for red wines, it provides a wonderful alternative to the other grape variety that is famous in Savoie, which is Mondeuse. And Mondeuse is the red grape variety of Savoie, but even Mondeuse is only a few hundred hectares. So that's just an example of the rarity of these grape varieties.
Yeah, as you say, there's only more or less 3,000 hectares or the whole region, and they have to divide it between 20 odd grapes. So there must be was more.
Well, to be fair, in Savoie itself, nearly half is planted with one grape variety, but it's a grape variety that only exists in the French Alps, which is Jacquard, which makes really sort of delicate, light, minerally white, partly from because of where it's grown and partly because of the nature of the grape variety itself. It's a very hardy grape, so it coped, and that's why they kept on growing it, because it ripened, even though in the old days it only got about 8 or 9% natural alcohol. So they always enriched or chaptalized. More recently, it's now beginning to reach 10.5-11% on its own, in as long as it's a good farmer and they're keeping the yields down. And in 2018, which was very warm indeed, they actually were getting 11.5-12% natural from Jacquard. So Jacquard makes up nearly half, and makes wines like Apremont and Chinon. Apremont. It's a very complicated region in terms of name.
I think it's fair to say there are like 16 villages for the legislation of in Savoie.
Yeah, that's for Savoie. And then there's also Roussette de Savoie. So Roussette de Savoie is a separate appellation that covers the whole region, but only for the Altesse grape. And that has its own four cru or geographic denominations. I hesitate to call them villages because often it's a little group of villages. And so, a little bit like in Beaujolais with the cru there.
So Altesse is makes the Rosette, which is considered one of the finest grape of the Savoie region. How does it taste like? What do you think is typical for
well,
it?
Well, Altesse is a little bit of a chameleon, because of a little bit like Chardonnay, it very much takes on its terroir, and it grows in a lot of different terroir. Everything is limestone based, but it depends whether how much clay there is there, and there is some very, very complicated soils in Savoie because of the geology and the moving glaciers and so on. So it varies quite a lot, and it also varies according to the microclimate as well. And each cru has its own particularity. And also many vignerons make it in quite different ways. So some will leave a little bit of residual sugar to counteract the very crisp acidity that it can have. To be fair, most of the good producers make it as bone dry as they can. But some years it will get a little, depending where it is, it will get a little bit of botrytis or noble rot. So then it's really hard to ferment it to dryness. And for the more natural wine producers who use indigenous yeast, it can take months and months to ferment. So talking about its character is really hard. So on the nose, it might be very simple sort of white flowers and a little bit of sort of yellow fruit character, again, depending where it comes from. And on the palate, there is this crispness to it, moderate alcohol, more than the Jacquard has, but it's the texture that is so wonderful. And the other thing about it is that not only can it age, it should be aged. And this is one of the challenges and problems that they have had in getting Savoie accepted as serious wines, because they have in the last few decades been seen as simply wines for the ski resorts. And they have been selling the ski resorts the most recent vintage. And that means that, you know, you have harvest in September or October, and then you bottle in January or December or January. And that's crazy. And Altesse needs to be bottled much later to make a good wine. And when it is bottled much later, at earliest, in my view, in March, but ideally in May, or indeed later, And then you sort of leave it in bottle until at least the next vintage. Then finally it begins to be expressive. And it's a big, big learning experience in Savoie. Of course, the top restaurants and the top work with the top producers and the top sommeliers in the region do understand that they need older vintages. But in the region itself, the everyday Savoie person just thinks, oh, no, it's got to be young. And in fact, the everyday Savoie person doesn't think much of Savoie wines, which is a shame.
Oh, yeah. Well, before I forget, I need to say to everybody that there is a beautiful section in the book and with all the geology and all the different villages, which I do invite everybody to look at because it was very much in detail. And we can just mention that it's mostly based on limestone, the soil. And the other thing is everybody has this picture of the Savoie wine being very high altitude in the mountain, but in reality, they're not.
It's an argument as to what you think is high altitude. So, yes, the vineyards can be higher altitude than definitely Bordeaux. But in fact, the average altitude in Savoie is about 300, 350 meters. They go up to 400, rarely 450. And that would compare with the sort of Haute Côte de Beaune, Haute Côte de Nuit, or it's not much different from Alsace. It's a little bit higher than Jura, but really we're not talking right up a mountain. However, the high mountains are very nearby and dictate the weather. As I'm talking with you, I'm at much higher altitude. I'm at 1,300 meters, and there's a storm coming through. And my worry whenever a storm is coming through is that it might possibly be hitting the vineyards, which are my nearest vineyard is Aiz over the mountain behind my house. And if they get a hailstorm now, and they're very, very prone to hail, it's a disaster. So I get very nervous when storms come, not so much for me, but for the vignerons. So the mountains in Savoie have a big, big impact on the weather, the nearby high mountains. So even if the vineyards themselves are not at particularly high altitude, they're often on very steep slopes, very rocky steep slopes, and the rocks actually help the grapes ripen. And because of they absorb the sunlight, and they can be very hot indeed, much hotter than anybody. Everybody thinks the French Alps are cool, but actually no. Climate change is being felt. Drought is becoming a problem. So no to very high altitude, but definitely yes to a mountain climate and steep slopes that are difficult to work and challenging to work for the vignerons and very costly to work as well.
There is a section in the book of this revival of the mountain slopes that before in the 80s, they were sort of being abandoned to more flatter area, and now there is a revival of these mountain areas. How do they do it, and why was abandoned? Why they were abandoning?
Well, they were abandoned for the combined reasons of being at the often at the limit of the altitude where they felt grapes would successfully ripen 30, 40 years ago. In those days, it was quantity that mattered more than quality. They were not able to get a decent quantity of grapes up there. But most importantly of all was the fact that they were so hard to work. You couldn't take machines up there. And the only way you could have worked them would be with the maximum chemicals possible. And frankly, the roads weren't built up there, and they were just abandoned more and more and more. Now, today, because and this has been happening little by little, it depends where it is, whether it's in an Appalachian zone or not, the higher slopes have gradually been replanted little by little by improving the infrastructure, the roads that tractors can go along and so on. But in certain areas, organic vignerons have said, right, we are prepared to work these slopes manually. And they will use hand strimmers to weed the vines. I mean, the weeds are a big challenge because this is a very wet area. So the weeds can become very, very competitive with the vines. So it isn't just about managing disease. It's about managing the ground and managing the weeds. And even though you look at a very, very rocky slope and you think, how can anything grow in there? Amazingly, all the weeds seem to manage to grow in there. And the rocky slopes can also mean that the machinery breaks because it's so rocky. So it's really, really challenging working on these higher and steep slopes.
I live in England, in London, and what we see in an export market is mostly these small producers that work in biological, biodynamic. Is it something that has been picked up a lot, or is it something more common?
It started in the 1990s with one vigneron in particular who has retired now, Michel Grisard of Domaine Prieuré Saint-Christophe. He wasn't the first to go organic. There was a very small domain near Lac Leman, near Geneva, but on the French side. But Michel was shall we say, more media friendly, and also he tried to sell his wines in Paris and Lyon, and he began to get a name for himself and his wines. He only ever made Mondeuse and Altesse. And he was from an old vine-growing family, but he had actually split from his brothers and started his own domain because he wanted to be organic. He then got inspired by biodynamics. So he, if you like, has led behind him a group of younger vignerons and sometimes even a couple of older ones who for years have farmed, should we say, reasonably, using the minimum chemicals, but using some because they needed to make a living and they couldn't see how they could desert chemicals completely in order and still make a living. But some of the older ones have converted now as well. And there's a growing band of organic vignerons, and there's some youngsters who have no family in the wine industry, but have come in. They have leased vineyards or taken over a small domain from somebody retiring and converted to organics and so on. So there's a vibrant movement going on, although the actual percentage of vineyards that are organic is not very big. It's about the average for France, sort of 10-12% of vineyards. So as you rightly said, in the UK market and in export markets in general, it's particularly these producers that are being sought after. And some of the new younger producers are actually refusing to sell to the ski resorts because there's no point of them even trying to sell to the ski resorts because their prices are too high. So they are reliant on the export market, plus a few Michelin-starred and top restaurants in usually the lakeside areas and the cities like Annecy and Aix-les-Bains.
There is an excitement about all the region, possibly because of the nearness, the closeness to the Jura region, and then possibly they picked up from there, but who knows? And there was another thing I think is very important when we talk about the Savoie region is the Cremant. They also make Cremant. And
there was a great history of making sparkling wine in Savoie, in particular Seyssel. Seyssel, which is a small town that straddles the Rhone River, because the Rhone runs through part of the vineyards of Savoie. And Seyssel straddles the Rhone River, and one side it is Haute-Savoie, which is one of the two Savoie departments, and the other side is Ain, and very close to the Bouget vineyards. But it's now, and they have vineyards on both sides, and they had a tradition of making traditional method sparkling wine from long ago, which was made from a very unusual rare grape called Molette, blended with Altesse. Unfortunately, it's a region that has sort of seen better days, if you like, but there's one producer who is sort of waving the flag for Seyssel, which and particularly for a famous brand that Queen Victoria of England used to drink in Aix-les-Bains, allegedly, which is called Royal Seyssel. Well, that's a bit of an abbreviated story. So for the rest of Savoie, there wasn't a great deal of sparkling wine made, but every producer made a little bit and always made it in the traditional method, made it from the Jacquard grape, maybe Altesse, and also in the last sort of 40 years, there's been Chardonnay grown there and Pinot Noir as well, neither of them traditional. So everybody made their own thing, really, but very tiny quantities, under 5% of anybody's production, with the exception of Seyssel. So now they have the Cremant Appellation. They've been, as they say in French, welcomed to the Cremant family. But it's early days. It's very, very early days. And as usual with Cremant, the rules for the grape mix are very strict. So they are obliged to have Jacquard, at least 40% Jacquard, and 60% if there's no Altesse. But if you've got some Altesse as well, then you can have just 40% of Jacquard. And whereas I actually agree with this move to stop having 100% Chardonnay or Chardonnay Pinot, because, hey, everywhere else does that, so why have that? It's very difficult for some of the areas where there's no Jacquard. And so there are some traditional areas for Roussette de Savoie, where Altesse is the traditional grape variety. So like in a village called Frangy and another one called Jean-Gieu. Jean-Gieu, they've always had some Jacquard, but in Frangy, they've never had Jacquard. And now they're having to plant it, which is not traditional, in order to make Cremant. But some producers are just refusing to do it and just doing sparkling wine, 100% Altesse, as they've always done, and they sell it as Vin de France and not Appellation. So it's a typical complicated Appellation Contrôlée mess, maybe we'll see more sparkling in the future, but I think it's come back in 10 years. It's not round the corner. It'll take a long time.
It's not quite there, but it's happening. It's something that can happen. Well, Wink, I think I will cover most of the things I wanted to ask about the region. There was the famous
Mont Granier. I'm going to interrupt you and me because I forgot a very famous sparkling wine, which is called Aïs, which I mentioned earlier. And Aïs is made from the Granger grape. And so when they did the Cremant de Savoie, Aïs was allowed to stay in the Appellation as a cru with Granger. And then Seyssel was able to stay as Seyssel. But apart from that, if it's in the Appellation, it has to be Cremant de Savoie. So Mont Granier, you wanted to know about Mont Granier. And it's funny that you are asking me this when there's a little storm rumbling behind me, because Mont Granier is a very distinctive looking mountain, which is close to Chambéry. And the vineyards below Mont Granier are the very well-known and most planted areas of Apremont and Abîme, where Jacquard is king. I mean, they can grow some other varieties as well, but they're not used under that name. And Mont Granier is the northern end of the Chartreuse mountain range. And yes, it is the same Chartreuse as the famous liqueur, which comes from the distillery and monastery, which is in those mountains, but a little bit further towards Grenoble to the south. So in 1248, in the winter in November, there was an almighty storm. In fact, there was really bad weather for a couple of days, and there was a massive, massive rockfall. The top of the mountain effectively fell off. And this was written about in church records, and that's why they know. And they know for a fact that it happened. They know the date and everything in November 1248. And the rock, the top of the rock fell off. And geologists today can now figure out what happened, that it broke off because there were sort of caves and natural caves filled up with water and made the whole mountain unstable. And then it fell off and caused a landslide. And all the villages below were buried. Everybody died. All the animals died. Everything was just rubble. I mean, a terrible, terrible story. And it took about 300 years before it began to be populated again. And they began to plant vines again because they realized that was one of the only crops that they could plant in such a rocky area.
Wow. Well, Wink, the mountain is also on the front of your book. And before I let you go, where people can find you, where social media, website or anything, where people can contact you?
Well, people can contact me through all the main social media sites under my own name, Wink Lorch. But I have a website, which is winetravelmedia.com. And on there, I write the occasional blog post, and I used to write much more on there, and I've sort of incorporated a lot on there. But it is also my website for selling both my books, which can be ordered from there and delivered all over the world.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure to copy in the link and find all the link there. Well, Wink, thank you so much for your time today. It was very interesting, and it's a very interesting region, and it's really coming up, and it's something to look at, especially from France. It's quite rare to find something new, I think. And
I think they're wines for tomorrow. Today and tomorrow, yeah, they're fresh mountain wines, lots of, dare I say it, minerality, interesting grapes. And the future is right there for the taking for these vignerons if they can do it. So thanks for the chance to talk about them.
You joined the conversation with Wink Lorch on Looking Into Wine, author of Wines of the French Alps. We have a special 20% discount code for Wink's books. Use the code LIWPC202020. That's LIWPC202020 on our website to get a discount valid until the 31st of December 2020. Be sure to go to mattiascarpazza.com and remember to join our mailing list now to receive the latest news and projects that are coming up. We also just had a funding box on the website. If you like the podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and every major listening app, as well as at mattiascarpazza.com. A special thanks to today's guest, Wink Lorch. Music produced by Samuele Di Nardo, audio edited and mastered by Tommaso Ascoli.